early 1900s, India, in the novel, the slogan of the nationalist movement is Bande Matataram, hail to the motherland. Sandeep is a charismatic leader. When he speaks, people become enthralled. But he knows the movement has the potential to turn ugly. Yet he fervently believes that freedom must be achieved no matter the cost. In support of his strategy, he cites a story from the Bhagavad Gita. He tells the story of Hindu Lord Krishna advising Arjuna to perform his duty as a warrior regardless of the collateral damage. And we can see that Sandeep's use of the Hindu story illustrates the tendency people can have of using religion as a basis for unhealthy nationalism. This bright young woman, Bimala, with so much potential, becomes enthralled with Sandeep's leadership, and she gets highly dedicated to the cause. Bimali complains to her husband, Nikhil, about his lack of commitment to the movement. Come on, man, you have to step up. This is for the good. In their town, leaders of the movement, including Sandeep, are strongly against the sale of foreign goods. And Bimala is telling her husband, who helps to manage the local market, look, she says, Sandeep has laid it down, all foreign articles, together with the demon of foreign influence, must be driven out of the territory completely. And Nikhil says, I just disagree. He states that in terms of banishing goods from the market, that he cannot do it. He will not tyrannize these vendors like that. And Bimala pleads with him, order everything to be cleared out. She rebuts what he's saying by saying, you won't be tyrannizing people for selfish gains. You'll be doing it for the sake of the nation. And Nikhil clarifies his position. He says, look, I'm willing to serve my country. I want to do that. But my worship, I reserve for right. I will worship what is right, which is far greater than my country. And I love this line. He says, to worship my country as God is to bring a curse upon it. Certainly fascinating to me how that is such a helpful sentence for us to meditate upon. They were suffering with the boot of an empire on their neck. In many ways, we are an empire, but we still struggle, and we struggle to get that sentence right. Sometimes we worship America too much. Tagore's novel demonstrates the slippery slope of nationalism. Bimala and Sandeep show how easily one can go from saying, I'm an Indian first and a citizen of the world second, to saying I'm a Hindu first and then an Indian, and third, a world citizen, or, you know, first is I'm an upper class landlord, and then the rest of it. The spiritual wisdom found in this book calls us to what is best in humanity when we realize that we are really interconnected with the rest of the world. The Sioux holy man Black Elk found this out on his personal journey, and he related stories about it. He says, then I was standing on the highest mountain of them all. Round beneath me was the whole hoop of the world. And while I stood there, I saw more than I can tell. I saw that the sacred hoop of my people is one of many hoops which make one circle, wide as daylight and starlight. And at the center is growing one mighty flowering tree. Here in the United States, I think many of us struggle with social, economic dynamics, which continually pull us apart. Factionalism between religions, which are trying to say they have the truth, the ultimate answers. two-party system, polarizing when we need to connect. Our own patriotism can be great. There's a lot of stuff to cherish and build upon in America, like freedom. However, our nationalism too often makes us feel we have the right to isolate in our problems and in our solutions, or what we think are solutions. We have plenty of problems, just like every nation. 32,000 gun deaths a year in the United States. 32,000 gun deaths a year. That's a number every American should know and etch in our hearts to change. One in five children is in a food insecure household. 16 million children in one of the richest nations in the history of the world. It's wrong. I mean, they don't get enough food, nutrition, struggle with hunger. One in five kids. Everyone should know that. And one of the biggest projects we're involved in is spending at least hundreds of millions of dollars a year on a drone program. I think this year, from what I just studied for the sermon, it's billions a year this year on drones that are killing. Over 50% of the people killed by our drone programs are what they call unintended targets. Over 50% of the people killed are people that were not intended to be killed by this program. We're spending hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars every year under President Obama. So we have enough to deal with in our problems and solutions that don't seem to be solving much, in my opinion, and I know a lot of you agree. The problems are overwhelming at the international level. We know that. We know that. Poverty, lack of health care, environmental degradation. It goes on and on. And it can feel so overwhelming, so depressing. If you're depressed, it makes sense that you're depressed. So many things to be bummed out about. And that's why we're partners with the UNO and the service committee, because it gives us a little hope that we can learn and do something. Learn and do something with partners. Tagore points out religions can divide, but there's so many rich religious and spiritual traditions that teach humanity is one, and we must work together. We can work together. So we have to just, one of the things that is great to have religious NGOs as a part of the United Nations is because we lift up these wisdom teachings that have been around forever. The Roman Stoic philosophers like Seneca were arguing, believe me, they got pushback, but they were arguing that our first allegiance cannot be government or a temporal problem, but the moral community made up of humanity of all human beings. That's 2,000 plus years ago. We need to be saying our first allegiance is the human family and other sentient beings. The Dalai Lama is all over the planet, bless his heart, working so hard. He's always talking about world citizenship as a great religious leader who we look to. He says, as long as there's no freedom in many parts of the world, there can be no real peace and, in a sense, no real freedom for the rest of the world. We know that. We know that. And if we buy into this transformational philosophy, we can make a difference one little act at a time. Today, we have information to show you that the service committee is working hard to help people assign petitions to the State Department to open our doors more widely to Syrian refugees. You can do something. You can do something. If that still doesn't feel like enough, if you're still wandering around, I know a lot of us, you know, I was like, I barely run my own life well enough on a day-to-day basis. How am I going to help the Syrian refugees? Many of us, not all of us, live in what I call these little tight progressive bubbles. We don't know many people who have different political opinions than us. So how am I going to make a difference when I'm preaching to the choir and the band? And whoever. It's hard. How am I going to do it? So just like all spiritual principles, if you break it down in concentric circles, be a world citizen in your daily life. You are one. Don't let anybody make you think you're not. Be empowered by advice like from the German philosopher Immanuel Kant. Kant's moral imperative states, people should act as if their behavior will be used as a model of behavior for the entire world. Of course it won't, but act as if what you do will be used as a model. It'll lift your game ethically and spiritually. People remember the amazing Nobel Peace Prize winner a number of years ago, Kenyan woman Wangari Maathai. She started by planting 9 trees in her backyard and then telling some fellow women in her neighborhood to do the same. Then they started getting the women the resources to do it, and eventually she had led a green belt movement which assisted women to plant more than 20 million trees throughout Africa. She had been one of the first female professors at Nairobi University, but she left that and went and did this. She just started by planting 9 trees in her backyard, acting as if her behavior could become a model for the world. And on her case, it did. Thank the heavens. You never know when you're going to create a tipping point. Act as if you can. You know, we take these actions. There's no guarantee anyone's going to follow what you do. If you're a parent, it probably means they're going to do the opposite, or I don't know. But you know what I'm saying. Or if you're in a marriage or whatever, or anything. We do it because we believe in the words of Nikhil, who said, we reserve our worship for what is right. We worship what's true. We worship what's good. Who cares about what religion you are or not religious? You can't focus your thoughts and actions on all the hoops of the family, the human family, all the time. But do one small thing. Go green on your light bulbs or carpool, or you have a friend that you're trying to get to know and you realize he or she's from a really different culture, or have, you know, family that goes way back. Of course, in America, we're a little bit xenophobic right now, I'd say. So learn about a different culture than yours and celebrate it with your friend. That matters. Do your thing. Acting as if. Praying for. And feeling in your heart that your action can ripple. We do this because none of us can experience freedom and justice until all of us experience freedom and justice. Blessings be. Amen.